Welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
And in today's episode, we're doing a bit of a WTC preview episode. So what this episode is, we're going to jump into some of the lists that caught our eye. What this episode isn't, is it's not going to be a blow-by-blow account of every single list and how they play. If you're looking for that content, I'd strongly recommend checking out Bo Mortensen's YouTube channel, or you could even just go to the WTC website itself, which we'll link in the comments, and you can download all of those army lists yourself and go through with a fine-tooth comb to see exactly what's in there. Phil, before we go into any lists, do you want to talk through the restrictions for this year's WTC?
Yep, so in terms of list building, it is 1,000 points. You can take one or two generic platoons.
Mm-hmm.
There is a list of units which are permitted, which are taken from the campaign books. So anything from Armies of is absolutely fine. And then there's a list of units from campaign books. So not everything from every campaign book that says can be taken in a generic platoon has been allowed, but there's a really good spread across all the different various nations. And in terms of the composition of lists, in terms of the teams, so it's a four-person team event. However, you submit five lists, and then obviously one of those lists doesn't get played from game one onwards. But at this stage, all the lists are in, they've all been submitted. Every team that's entered has submitted their five lists, and then come the weekend itself, in a couple of weekends' time, will be when those four lists that get played will be revealed.
Indeed, yeah.
The other thing to note, though, is that you can't duplicate nations across the five. So, for example, you couldn't put in two Soviet lists and three other nations. So there can be no duplication across the five. They've split Australia separate to Britain, for example, but Canada counts as a British platoon. So there you go.
Fantastic. So having said all that, as you say, Phil, one of these lists for each nation won't get played. So it may be that we talk about a list that isn't going to come up. But before we dive into the specific lists, I'll give everyone a broad strokes overview of the types of nations people are bringing. So we've got the countries coming to WTC. We've got Denmark bringing two teams, England bringing three, France, Italy, Spain are bringing four teams plus a referee team, who I think are there to fill gaps. Sweden are bringing two teams. The United States are coming with three teams. It's a long way to travel with three teams. And we've got Wales with one team. So all in all there, we've got 18 teams across eight nations with four players each. So we're looking at 72 players in total. But obviously, you've got 90 lists here. So that's a lot of list checking. So looking at the nations the countries are bringing, every country apart from, so every team apart from the Swedish first team are bringing a British list, which tells me that the Brits are clearly a force that the competitive players are thinking is a very competitive force at the minute. Mm-hmm. Tied with that, you've also got the Soviets, who are included in every team's choice apart from Spain 4. After that, you're then looking at the US. About three quarters of the teams are bringing a US list, 14 mm-hmm. out of the 18. And then we've got a bit of a drop-off, and Japan, only two-thirds of the teams are bringing a Japanese list, which I think is probably under-repped. After Japan, you've then got Germany, which is to be expected, because I think everybody has a German army. And then we've got Tough Guts just came out. I'm not at all surprised to see, now that you've got German with some flavoursome units,
mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised people are including that, even if it's just their fifth list that they're not going to play. But then the interesting one is that the Italians are tied. So we've got nine teams bringing Germans and nine teams bringing Italians.
Hmm.
Is that a bit of a surprise to you as well, Phil?
Yeah, I think I was expecting to maybe see a few more Japanese lists and maybe not as many US lists. And then I wasn't expecting to see an equal number of Germany and Italian lists. I was expecting to see slightly more German lists, although they are difficult to build in a competitive way. And we're going to highlight at least one German list in a minute, which is a very interesting build. It's not your kind of typical sort of German list that you see. I'm not surprised to see Italy appearing more than maybe previously, because Tough Guts has given them a massive boost. And when you look at the way that the Italian lists have been built, they've been submitted, it's very much leaning into not just Tough Guts units, but also the national special rule that Tough Guts adds, mainly with regards to the extra AT tweaking that's happened there.
That's exactly what I was thinking. They've got a lot of ways to sneak in a light autocannon, a strength too. It's getting that boost from the improvised AT rule.
Exactly,
And I think that's probably why we're seeing them. I do think the German and Italian lists tend to be the ones that I think are the fifth lists Mm-hmm. They're the ones that we're probably not going to see. So I reckon in reality, we'll probably see about six of each would be my expectation. So that's the main players, basically. After that, the other nations that are being repped, that are being represented, are in alphabetical order. These have two teams bringing this nation. So we've got China, France, and Romania. There are three players bringing Poland, and I think there's only one cavalry, Polish.
Yeah, predominantly cavalry, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then your sort of quirky nations that you're only seeing one of are we've got Australia, we've got Hungary, and we've got partisans. So they've each got one team bringing one list of them. So it is a bit of a spread, but most of the lists are across four nations. Basically, you've got Britain, Japan, Soviets, and USA, and they account for 60 of the 90 lists, those four nations.
What's interesting, and we didn't break down the World Open War lists in this way in terms of the number of nations, the number of teams bringing different nations. However, you did see a lot of British and Soviet lists, obviously, and it was a three-person event rather than a four-person event. But it wasn't British, Soviets, and then predominantly US.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here it's British, Soviets, and then the US slightly behind, and then it falls away to Japan and Germany. At World Open War, you saw a lot of Japanese lists, you saw a decent amount of German lists, and then you also had, you know, the more random ones, you know, like Romania and so on. So that's interesting. We're not, if you took the WTC spread and then applied it to World Open War would have been British, Soviets, and US.
Yeah, I think the US are possibly as well, what I was saying about the Italians and the Germans, I think some of these nations, that US list might well be the fifth list that they're not going to play because the US are, they're not a top tier army because they're just good at everything, but they're not amazing at any one specific thing, I would say. And so they're a great one to throw in as your fifth list in case, because everyone could build a US list that's fairly competent, can't they?
Mm. It will also be interesting to see, actually, and we wouldn't know this because unless we actually went around and asked all of the captains, how many teams wrote a fifth list with no intention of playing it, but actually when it came to the event itself, went, you know what? And then had a bit of a change of mind. Because I do know from talking to some people that the fifth list may not actually be that dummy list they've thrown in. It may actually be a genuine contender for one of the four armies or one of the four lists that does actually appear, because all the players in the team are happy to you know, mix and match prior to the event and then nail down their colours ready for that first game.
Absolutely, yeah. I think if I wasn't flying and so had to pack the army for a flight, if I was just driving to the tournament, I certainly would bring the fifth list as well, because it doesn't hurt to have it if you suddenly have a last minute change of heart, especially because you get, it's like getting to see behind the curtain before you commit, because you throw in your five lists, you have a little look behind the curtain and then decide, actually, this one is going to get stomped. But I mean, it is what I expected in summary. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what I expected, what we've seen at competitive tournaments for quite some time now in Bolt Action.
Mm-hmm.
So shall we jump in and look at a few of the more interesting lists? So obviously we talked about things we were expecting. Is there anything in the list that you weren't expecting to see?
So I'm going to start with the French team and the French nation. I actually thought we might see more French lists being submitted than we did.
May we?
May we? The answer. But I am going to highlight the French list submitted by the French team. What I will say is that these are not necessarily lists that we think are absolutely amazing top draw. We're not scoring them. We're not ranking them. Other people on social media and the internet will do that absolutely fantastically well. So the French list is 22 dice. That's a lot of dice.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about it is you've got six of the early war LMG bikes in the armored car slots. Obviously, you can take three for one.
Clearly, this is a man after my own heart over here.
Yep. We've got a couple of engineers, so spread across two platoons.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a couple of foreign legions, so you get your stubborn squads, yeah, great for objective holding and that sort of thing. The nation or the team is obviously taking advantage of the free howitzer, or sorry, the free artillery rule, but they're not taking howitzers. So
they're taking an anti-tank gun.
So what they've
no
got.
No way.
Yeah. So in their first platoon, they've got a veteran light auto cannon.
Yeah.
They've got a free medium anti-tank gun rather than a free medium howitzer.
Yeah.
And then you've got a light anti-tank gun, which they're paying for in their second list.
Wow.
To get to 22 dice, they have got two mule teams and a horse-drawn limber.
Yeah, I was going to say, because 22 dice is about 45 points a unit on average. And yeah. So when you're saying these, like, the Foreign Legion squad and the engineers, I'm thinking, what are they taking that's worth nothing than to offset that?
Yeah.
But there you go.
And then, yeah, they haven't got, they're not using the tank slot. You know, they're using the armored car slot with the LMGs. They've got the Citroen Caprice half track.
And no FT in there to the FT-17, because that's a 35-point tank. So that's a nice way to fill a dice.
Yeah. So no, I just thought it was a really interesting list. And the fact that they've got the six annoying little kind of like flies buzzing around, sticking out a pin, which is the LMG bikes, I thought was really interesting.
Nice. Well, that's interesting. I do like that. The French have brought a French list.
Yeah.
And the Italians have brought an Italian list.
Italians brought an Italian list. Absolutely, yeah.
The Brits have brought a British list. Yep. The Americans... Oh, one of the American teams didn't bring an American list, which I think is poor form. And I don't think the Welsh brought a Welsh list either.
No.
So we'll have to have words about that. So that was our first one, the French. What was the next list you wanted to highlight?
So we're going to jump to Sweden 1.
Mm-hmm.
We said earlier on, they didn't take a British list, which is really interesting in itself.
Yeah, fascinating.
But that's not the reason I'm highlighting them. The reason I am going to highlight them is they've got a partisan list.
Nice.
Yeah. So this is 17 order dice, bang on 1,000 points dual platoon. So they've got two multi-launchers. So they're using the Renault UE. In the tank slots of the captured vehicles. Platoon 1, you've got, you know, nine-man regular partisan squad with a Panzerfaust, which is fairly standard. You've got two 20-man Mackie squads with pistols in experience. 80 nice. Points, 20 people with pistols, which is huge. And then you've got things like you've got your medium mortar sniper. They've got a bazooka team in there, which you can do for the partisans. You can take the bazooka for them. And then you drop to the second list, and then you've got your two compulsory units there are two 5-man Mackie squads. So we've gone from 20 down to 5. So it's really interesting. You've got these two massive blobs in terms of the 20-man squads. You've got a little 9-man regular partisan squad with a Panzerfaust. And then you've got to make the list legal and to have enough unit choices of platoon 2, you've got two little 5-man squads. I just thought it was worth noting that somebody had brought a partisan list. It's a little bit different, a little bit interesting.
Yeah, it's nice to see them. I actually think partisans are a really nice sort of minor force. You can add loads of flavour to it by, especially with the captured vehicle rules. Obviously, here they're using it. There's a bit of a competitive streak. Mm-hmm. But I really like how when you're playing more thematically, you can basically capture the vehicle that was most predominantly there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really nice. And there's quite a lot going on there. And I think the other thing as well is the partisans are good for catching people off guard because they're not a common one you face. You've got those bombs people drop. So you drop your bombs at the beginning. If you're not regularly playing against it, it can be a bit of a deterrent, a bit like the British Observer where he plonks it. You've got to kind of decide, am I going to commit to it? Am I going to try and avoid it? But then what's the implications of that? It's actually, it could be a good one for catching people out.
Mm. Speaking of catching people out, so we're going to look at
fantastic segue, sir.
Thank you. We're going to look at the German list from Spain 1.
Yep. And what's so special about the Spanish German list?
It's very different.
Different to
what you tend to see with German, or certainly what I've seen with sort of competitive German lists, is people quite often lean into the pioneers and the field cars. They start to see cavalry more and more.
Mm-hmm.
The 259 makes an appearance and so on. There are elements of that. So there's a lot of autocannons in this list. So it is 1,000 points on the nose. It's 14 order dice, dual platoon. So platoon 1, you've got your regular lieutenant on his own. And then the four squads in platoon 1, I'm not going to pronounce the German because I will butcher it. You've got a 15-man unarmed, inexperienced convict squad for 45 points.
Yep.
Yep. You've got a 5-man regular guard force, who were there obviously to buff the convicts.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a 5-man Brandenburger squad, 5 SMGs, 3 Panzerfaust for 120 points. They're really expensive, the Brandenburgers.
Compared to the other squads they have.
Yeah, yeah. And then you've got another 13-man unarmed, inexperienced convict squad for 39 points. So of those four, you've basically got 10 models that can do anything at range across, you know, across two squads there. You then start looking at the support options. You've got your inexperienced medium mortar, which is fine. Your 37mm Flak 36, so that's the heavy autocannon. Yes, it's fixed, but it's an absolute beast of an artillery piece. You've got your 259 as your armoured car, which is your fantastic little armoured car recce option. Your Dacker Panzer, Panzer III. And then you move into the second platoon. You've got your Kriegsmarine officer. So this was one of the units that got added from the campaign book. So inexperienced officer, 35 points. To make it legal, you've got to take a Kriegsmarine squad. So the list here has got a 5-man inexperienced rifle Kriegsmarine squad with a Panzerfaust. Then you've got Straf Battalion. They're regular, but they're shirkers. One SMG, one Panzerfaust. And then the only other thing in the second platoon is a Kugelblitz at 205 points.
Pricey, so, isn't it?
Yeah. So you start breaking down this list. So you've got some really strong autocannon choices there. You've got your 37mm Flak 36. You've got your 259. You've got your Kugelblitz. And then you've got your Dacker Panzer III. And then when you start looking at the actual infantry to go with it, it's blobs of unarmed men, or it's the Straf Battalion regular shirkers. The Brandenburg is obviously to affect people's reserve roles and outflanking roles and so on. And then your guard force to basically buff the unarmed convicts.
I mean, it's interesting. I think it's just, it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I wouldn't like to play it. It's the kind of thing that I might take to sort of a thematic tournament.
Okay.
At a competitive tournament, once you take away the two tanks,
yeah,
you've got nothing that can really delete a squad in three turns, really.
No, and obviously, I guess the player here is very much banking on the Flak 36, the 259, the Panzer III, and the Kugelblitz doing the work, and then the other blobs of infantry effectively are there to hold ground, suck up casualties, become roadblocks. I think I know who this list is, and I played that person at WoW, and they had a similar list, but WoW was 1,100 points single platoon. But they had a similar list in terms of the sort of spread across the autocannons, for example, interesting, you know, unarmed squads, that sort of thing. And it played very differently, and it's something that I had never played before, against a Germanist, or this is not how I would build a Germanist. So in that sense, if you're talking about sort of being caught off guard, this is one of those lists where you look at it and go, unless you like really experienced or build these lists yourself, you look at it and go, wow, I don't see how that's going to work. But having played who I think it is at WoW, it does work, or it certainly did. WoW, the guy did very well at WoW, and the team did very well at WoW.
I think it's a funny one because only 14 dice, but then loads of inexperienced. It's a bit of a juxtaposition of those two ideas. Mm. And I think it will be interesting, one to watch, I guess, because I'm not sure on it yet.
No, and I've, you know, we've talked about Soviets before, and I've said a few times that I can't build a decent Soviet list because I can't get my head around the massive amount of inexperienced squads and you know how they work. But clearly that people can, and clearly people do very well, you know, with inexperienced squads. And similarly, I look at this and go, it's just a little bit like, oh, I'm not really sure where to go with this one. But it works. It'd be interesting to see how this particular list does and how the team does as well.
What else is on the agenda, Phil? What else have you seen? Like, what else has caught your eye, Phil?
Okay, so we're going to look at England 1,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to look at the Chinese list.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Why this one, Phil?
Firstly, it's only one of two Chinese lists. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, fair play for bringing it. A really interesting list for me. It's dual platoon, 15 dice, bang on 1,000 points again. What you've got here in terms of the squad, so the platoon one, you've got 2 8-man veteran guerrilla cells with pistols. These guys forward deploy. So unless obviously the mission says otherwise, these people are going to be forward deploying. So that in itself is pretty in your face. You get your free levy squad, which is similar to the Soviet free squad. There's a flamethrower there, which is going to sit in a Jeep. You've got your medium howitzer, the BA-10 in the armoured car slot. I don't tend to see these being taken by Soviet players. Occasionally do see them taken by Finns, but as an option in the Chinese list, it gives you that turret-mounted light AT gun, coaxial LMG, forward-facing LMG with recce. In the tank slot, they've taken a Panzer 1, So you've kind of almost flipped the tank and the armored car around. So your tank is effectively, you know, your dual MMG, and your armored car is what's doing the heavy lifting, as it were. And then the second platoon, another 2 8-man guerrilla cells, another medium howitzer, another BA-10. And then to bulk up the numbers, there's a couple of mule teams floating around as well.
It'll be an interesting one to play with all the forward deployers. I think this one will be very mission dependent.
Mm-hmm.
I think if those forward deployers are going to be a big factor, this will be a big list.
Yeah.
If forward deploying's not allowed, or if it's just kind of irrelevant because your opponent hasn't brought forward deployers and doesn't really care if you come closer to them because they plan to shoot you anyway, then it might not be as powerful. So I think this one's a little bit of a... This one could go either way for me.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the double medium howitzers, though. I think that's a classic combo.
Yeah.
The old 1-2 punch.
And there's a lot of duplication in this list in terms of you've got two howitzers, you've got the two BA-10s, you've got the four guerrilla squads. So there's that element of, okay, well, if one of them gets knocked out, it's okay because I've got the second one to back it up.
Yeah, or even just pinned down. With the armored cars and stuff, what I find is often you'll take a couple of pins. Now that armored car's pointless, you can wreck it away and the other one can sweep in to put pins out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is the way that I like to build lists, actually, now you mention it. I have to say, though, not a lot of flamethrowers in the ones we've highlighted, and scanning through the list without doing serious data analysis, it feels like there's a lot of lists with sort of like two engineer squads.
Yeah.
That seems quite common, but there's not a lot of lists that have really lent into flames. It feels like if it's the day of the Dakar at the minute.
Yeah, it's the day of the autocannons. It's not so much the Dakar, it's the day of the autocannons. There's a huge amount of autocannons flying around. We mentioned, you know, it's Salian lists earlier, and that's to be expected because realistically, you're probably going to be going up against Armour 8 vehicles, Armour 7 vehicles. You know, there aren't many Armour 9 vehicles there. So an autocannon, light autocannon with a +2 pen at normal range, you know, that's going to impact potentially against those Stuarts and all that sort of stuff.
But this is where we could swing all the way around, because basically the Dakar came in, Dakar Stuarts, the Panzers, they're so prolific now that everyone's turning to the
M42. Yeah.
Everyone's turned to the light autocannon as the counter to it because it's the most affordable counter to it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder if it's time to start countering the light autocannons yet with heavier tanks or something, or just no tanks.
Yeah.
And then that would be really interesting to then see the next wave. I don't know, though. It does feel like we're in a bit of a stalemate, a bit of a trench warfare situation where we're waiting for the next big breakthrough, and maybe we need a new version for that to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Who's going to make the first move, and is it going to be successful? Yeah. And it's interesting what you said about the flamethrowers. I think from memory, there's only one list that has four flamethrowers in it.
Mm-hmm.
So what you might call it, you know, an out-and-out barbecue list. There's a few with three flamethrowers. There's a really nice British list, actually. It's got two PPA Jeeps, which I thought fair play for bringing that. But yeah, you're not looking at a ton of lists with four or five flamethrowers in.
Yeah, it's because you've got so many stubborn Gurkhas flying around, isn't it?
Like, yeah, you got Gurkhas and your Japanese with their asbestos pants. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is where actually having one flame list in your army is not too... in your selection of five lists,
yeah, yeah.
Having one isn't the end of the world because it means you can sort of swerve the stuff that's flame-proof. But the problem is, even then, it means you're having to take a duck every time to just duck those lists. And so this is probably why we're not seeing them at the minute.
Cool. So the final list we're going to talk about is USA Team 2, and it's their British list.
Oh, interesting. So many British lists, and we've left it till last. I presume this one isn't just Paragurkas with two Stuarts, if it's one that you're highlighting, sir.
So this one has no Gurkhas, and it is, to my knowledge, the only British list that hasn't got a single Gurkha unit in it.
Nice.
Generally speaking, that the British lists have Gurkhas, either regular or Paras. They've got some Stuarts. There's a couple with Crusaders. They allowed land mattresses for the British, so you are seeing quite a lot of land mattresses in British lists.
Yeah, that was a bit controversial from my perspective because it I've said it before, but I guess I'll say it again. It's the only thing the Brits don't have, and so I don't think we needed to give it to them. But once you've released the pack, everyone knows it's available.
Yep.
Game on.
Yeah. There are quite a few Brengineers. It's not like every list has got Brengineers. But the reason for highlighting this one is there are no Gurkhas. So it's 18 dice dual platoon. Vengeance is the national characteristic.
My favourite.
Up an atom is pretty much what you're seeing in all the other lists because of the Gurkhas. So instead of Gurkhas, what you've got are Maori squads. So using the rules from Duel in the Sun, so they're taking regular infantry sections. Using the Duel in the Sun rules, they are then paying the extra 1 point per man to give them the Maori special rule. So across the two platoons, you've got 4 7-man Maori rifle sections, all with an SMG on the NCO.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've basically just got duplication. So you've got 2 land mattresses, 6 of the LMG bikes.
Yeah, man after my own heart once again.
2 Chaffees. In the tank slots. So, and the Chaffee's good because it's a medium anti-tank gun with a 2-inch HE template. So as well as being a threat to vehicles, because it's a medium anti-tank gun, that 2-inch template does actually do a bit of work if you need to against infantry. And then you've got your free observer, and then for your bonus 4 points, you've got a mule to bring it up to 18 dice.
I do love the Chaffee because I love its recce. I love a recce tank because anywhere where you can nip around the corner, shoot stuff and then retreat back. Mm-hmm. I think the reason we don't see it very often is because it's more expensive than a Stuart and it gets far less shots.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a shame because I actually think it's a really cool looking tank as well. It looks like what you see after World War II as well.
It's
very of that aesthetic. So I do really like it for that reason. Mm-hmm. And so fair enough, 140 for a recce Stuart or 160 for a recce Chaffee. Most players are going to go with the lighter anti-tank gun, but cheaper points.
I guess if you find yourself at an event where they're limiting or banning Dacre Stuarts, it's a really good shout. Or the Crusader.
If they're banning the Stuart and the Panzer III, Chaffee Pumas, it's their day, basically. The thing that is interesting about this one, because I love the recce bikes, one thing I noticed is 2 of them have LMGs per platoon, and 1 has an SMG.
Mm.
Which is really interesting. I'm not a fan of that because the range just is not enough.
No, I expect it. Well, partly it's to drop the points down to then put the mule in to give you an extra dice.
Yeah, well, I mean, even take the mule out, you haven't got the 10 points to pay for the LMG.
Mm.
What I would have done personally is I would have dropped 2 men and had 6 LMG bikes because 6 putting out 6 pins at 36 inches per turn is pretty tasty.
Yeah, then that's... You're then looking at 6-man regular squads, though.
Yeah, but equally, the 7-mans are a little bit tight as well. Mm. This is one of the things that I'm noticing, actually. There's a lot of the players are playing very aggressive bolt action, very sort of like kill points, meet engagement, those types of missions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the lists are looking quite light on the ground when it comes to objectives and things holding.
Yeah.
And I mean, the missions have been published. There are quite a lot of objective missions in there.
Yeah. There are also kill points involved in some of those objective-based missions. So,
yeah, that is a big thing. And I think a lot of them, in those missions, they're going to just be playing meet and engagement and ignoring their objectives, basically.
One of my thoughts throughout looking at all of the lists were, you often hear that bolt action is an infantry-based game. But when you actually look at these lists, there's a huge amount of vehicles in terms of the proportion of vehicles to infantry. And then there are some lists. I think Denmark 1's Soviet list has only got 3 infantry squads, one of which is the 3 12-man squad, and then it's got 2 5-man engineer squads. And there are other lists. There's another list. I can't remember which nation and which country it was, but they've got 4 5-man squads.
Mm-hmm.
And they were inexperienced as well. So you're putting so much emphasis on the ability to delete dice with your vehicles, with your HE, flamethrowers, whatever, that your infantry are just there to kind of sit on an objective, to go down in cover and pop their heads up when they need to, turn 5, turn 6, if you've got to rush on. So it'll be really interesting how the lists play out over the weekend.
Yeah, I am looking forward to seeing all these quirky ones. I think there's a lot of lists that I know exactly how they're going to play.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be that noteworthy. I mean, it's going to come down basically to the player and the mission, the opponent that they've got, and sort of the luck of the dice, because sometimes it's a rock meeting a hard place and it's just whoever gets that big 6 first, basically. Mm-hmm. What I would like to, before we...
I had an honourable mention.
Do you want to do your... So I did fancy just running through the missions just very briefly, but you do your honourable mention first.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So it didn't make the cut for the top 5 lists to talk about, but my honourable mention goes to USA's 3's Japanese list.
Nice.
It's 24 dice. I think it's the highest dice count in all of the lists. 105 bamboo spear dip guys.
I'm really excited to see if it's one of their genuine lists.
Yeah.
Or if it's just their fifth list, because that's a lot of men to buy paint.
Yeah.
And then even transport.
Yeah, and then bring
the
it
distance
over.
They're traveling. Yeah. So
yeah.
Excited to find out. And it is the it's the bogeyman list, isn't it? The one that everyone for years and years and years, like probably even since first edition, people have been talking about this list, or the bamboo spear horde. Watch out for the bamboo spear horde.
Yeah.
And it's so rarely encountered. So
yeah.
I hope they do bring it, because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is a full-on plantation. This is not a little copse of bamboo. This is a proper plantation of bamboo coming across the board at you. Yeah.
The deforestation brigade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So now we've covered the armies, I would quite like to quickly look at the missions, because they have pre-published what missions we'll be playing.
Yep.
Just to sort of get your thoughts on it. Mission one, meet and engagement, I think we'll both agree. Throw it in. It's not the best mission in the world. It's not the worst mission in the world. It's a good tournament mission, basically, is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mission two, key positions. A lot of people's favorite mission.
Mine included.
Yeah, not my favorite, but I think, like meet and engagement, I think everyone knows what's going on there. It's a very balanced mission. I think we're in, I mean, you can't stack the dice, but it's a high risk, high reward strategy. But yeah, key positions, you cannot complain. Mission three is where it starts to get a little bit interesting. And I've tried this one, and I have to say I quite enjoyed it. It's called Penetrate and Strike. It's basically double envelopment, but you can't leave the table, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you're getting a point for a unit killed. You're getting points for being in the neutral zone. So 1 point for every unit in the neutral zone, 3 points for being in your opponent's deployment zone. If you're across two zones, it's wherever the majority of the models are. So if like more than half your tanks in the enemy deployment zone, you count as being in the enemy deployment zone. It's a really interesting one. The thing that's made it really interesting is because we're not rushing in, rushing off the table, outflanks back in play, but forward deploying is off the table.
Mm.
And so it's interesting having that dynamic where no forward deployment, but outflanks in play, and we're trying to get across the table, but equally, don't rush too fast because you're going to lose all your dice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is that timing if you are going to outflank when you try and bring them in, because they need to be still there at the end of turn six or turn seven if it goes that far. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting actually, because you could just play it as meet and engagement if you'd like, and just everyone moves into the neutral zone and the no man's land in the middle, and you just see who has the most dice left at the end, basically. Heartbreak, which is one of Bolt Action Alliance missions.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great mission. I'm not sure it's my favorite tournament mission, though, because I don't like having to have that objective in the middle. I don't know what your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I like objective missions, and you are right that because it has to sit in the middle, it does become a bit of a fight over the middle objective. But kill points matter, so it is possible to, you know, to win the game and not hold the central objective if you've taken enough units and you've contested or denied that central objective. So
yeah, and I think this is why a lot of people are just going to be playing the kill points, because an objective mission with kill points. We've had a movement mission that's actually kill points as well, and an objective mission. Sectors is mission five.
Yeah.
Classic. I don't think we need to say too much. I think it's very much in the vein of meet and engagement, key positions. It's a solid mission that very few people complain about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's changed in any way either, is it? It's just the standard as it comes mission.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And then we've got Timely as mission six, which isn't one of my favorites, to be honest. I think it's a really fun mission. I don't think if you're doing full competitive tournament, it's a great mission for the exact same reason I just criticized Heartbreak, basically. You're basically forcing the players to fight in specific locations, and that's not what I really like, because you're taking away a lot of the agency, which means you're very much limiting the types of strategies that do work. I mean, what are your thoughts on Timely?
I do like it, because there is, yes, you have to deploy the objectives along the halfway point, but you don't have to put them bang in the center of the table. That you have agency with regards to where you put them along. The other thing to note as well is with Timely, there is no forward deploying, and you do see sometimes at events that when you play Timely, they allow forward deploying, which is really frustrating if you've got that Chinese list we talked about earlier for England, for example.
Mm-hmm.
If you were playing against that and you were allowing forward deploying in Timely objectives, that's 4 8-man veteran tough fighter squads that are forward deploying. So good to see that forward deploying is not allowed. And I believe the original mission, when it was first written by the Snafu guys, didn't allow forward deploying. Somewhere down the line, it's crept into packs, and that's why you see it nowadays.
Yeah, and the original did have very specific places the objectives were placed. The other thing that has shifted here is in the original, to stop it just being a small team snatch, you had to have at least 3 men to take an objective.
Okay.
And I believe that's been removed here, which again is probably why we're not seeing as many infantry squads.
Okay.
Because your small teams can hold it in this one, I believe.
It is worth pointing out as well, there's only one mission of the six which has prep bombardment, which is really good to see. And we've talked before about choosing your missions across events so that you don't have, you know, on a three game, one day event, you don't want to see two missions with prep bombardment. And likewise, over 2 days, you start seeing three missions of prep bombardment. And that's tough going if you're playing British lists a lot. So it's good to see there's only one here with prep bombardment.
What is interesting is in the original Timely, there was prep bombardment, I believe. And so, because the idea is you stop, because you can deploy within 12 inches of those objectives.
Right.
And so by putting those pins on in the it forces players to make the decision, do I risk that order test on a six?
Okay.
But then I might get the victory point if it passes. But if I fail it, I've lost potentially two victory points, but next turn as well. And that was a really nice decision. So as much as I don't like facing Brits with two with two dice on prep bombardment, it does make a big difference to the Timely there.
Mm.
And for example, actually the big thing that it makes, the biggest difference it makes is in Timely objectives with prep, you really have to make a hard call on whether you put troops in transports. Because if you do, it's a huge advantage if they survive the prep, because you can just rush forward, get in front of the objective, which really stops your opponent getting on it.
Mm-hmm.
When the prep's in play, that's a tough call of to whether you're going to risk that, because you could potentially lose three infantry squads and three vehicles. And so, especially if you're facing Brits. And so I'm not sure how I feel about that just yet. I suppose ask me after the tournament. Well, if you are going to WTC, I look forward to seeing you there. Hopefully you don't beat me too badly.
If you're interested in looking at all of the lists, if you head over to the IGE page, we'll put a link in the description, you can download all of the current lists. As I said, there are plenty of other people running through them in a lot more detail than we have, so go check them out.
As ever, thank you for listening.
Please do like, share, subscribe.
Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now.